Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall. As always, I'm always thrilled to do my show and to have guests on and just talk about ideas, all about living life and improving ourselves and just being better. Today, my guest is Elizabeth Kaler Pentecost, and she's author of this beautiful book called The Missing Kennedy, Rosemary Kennedy and the Secret Bonds of Four Women. And before I bring her out, I want to say thank you to all you listeners for supporting me in the purchase of my new book. My book is called Today You Forgive Me, What About Tomorrow? Living the Fabulous Life Through Forgiveness. And I just can't believe how well it's doing, and with barely no advertisement or anything. So it's like word of mouth. And I appreciate it, and I wanted to let you know I bought some new carpet for my living room because of you. So that was really nice. It helped brighten it up. The carpet I had was an ugly gray color. I've had it for years. So I think that's the carpet they give you when you just when you get a new apartment. They throw it in there, I guess, as a courtesy. But now I'm bright and cheery in here now. It's just so much nicer, and I give thanks to all of you. So I'm going to welcome Elizabeth to the show. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me today.
Oh, thanks for coming back. You know, you were on before. We had such a great time. You know, this is such a fascinating book. I want to get right into the fact. Well, first of all, can you tell us a little bit about Rosemary Kennedy and why, what was it about her that was so fascinating to you to want to write about her?
Well, part of it was, of course, my own personal connection with Rosemary. My aunt was a St. Francis of Assisi nun, and she was assigned her care to care for Rosemary in 1960, and she took care of Rosemary after Rosemary had her tragic lobotomy, which rendered her almost unable to communicate and to walk. She wore diapers. And then when my aunt came along, she really enlarged Rosemary's life, not only through training her, but through lots of loving care. And through that love, Rosie just blossomed and came into her own. And so Rosemary was a very loving person. Through research, I discovered that she was this way before her lobotomy, and she was this way after her lobotomy as well. And I just feel that what happened was a very big tragedy, but how Rosie reacted to it, how my aunt reacted to it, and most importantly, how the Kennedy family reacted to this horrible tragedy was actually a blessing in disguise for the whole world as to how we treat and deal with anyone with a disability or a mental illness.
Oh, my goodness. You know, when you say lobotomy, that to me is such a scary-sounding word.
Oh, it is.
What do they do? Do they actually remove pieces of the brain? Like, how do they do that?
Rosemary was actually awake during the procedure. Frightening and awful to think of this, but this was back in 1941.
Oh, Lord.
And she was 23, and she had developed horrible mood swings where she reacted very violently in temper tantrums. She injured herself and her loved ones. And in 1941, they really didn't know anything about medication, or they didn't feel that, you know, talk therapy, they didn't understand the benefits of that. They had no clue on how to deal with anyone who suffered from a mental disease. And so this really, was a horrible problem back then. And the one of the surgeons who operated on her was very much of a public relations man, more than a very good neurologist.
Oh.
And so he basically said this is a cure for everything, for mental illness, for epilepsy, for homosexuality, for a bored housewife or a teenager who smarted back. Those were the people who got this horrible surgery. And so what they did with Rosemary is they actually drilled holes in the prefrontal area of her brain, which was like on the side of the forehead, and they inserted a very thin, they inserted a something that almost was like an ice pick, it was not a very pleasant procedure. Dr. Freeman, the lobotomist, he talked to her, and he told Rosemary to sing and to count, and she obeyed him, while his partner, Dr. James Watts, turned this metal object in her brain.
Oh, my God.
And when she no longer could respond to commands, they were finished. Unfortunately, in Rosemary's case, it was a horrible disaster, and one that finally he could not hide, because other people who had this disaster didn't have time or money, or they weren't famous. They didn't know what to do, and so they were really out of luck. Rosemary, of course, was out of luck, but she had a family who could provide for her, and Joseph found, eventually he did find the right home for her, which was St. Colettas, which was run by the nuns in Wisconsin, and that's where my aunt took care of her.
Oh, my goodness. It's just, I'm looking at her on the cover of this book. I mean, she's beautiful.
She is. She was beautiful. She was radiant. You know, there are pictures in the book both before her lobotomy and after, and everyone said that she was the most beautiful and striking Kennedy, and she had a very sweetness to her both before and after the tragedy.
Wow. And you can almost see it through the photo.
Yes.
That smile is amazing. Now, you visited her as a child. Did you realize who she was, like that family? The Kennedys?
I grew to know, yes. I grew to know. Of course, when I met her, I was 4.
And
she was 43.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, it's just that I knew that we visited her along with my aunt on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to have cookies and lemonade. And Rosemary was very loving, as were all the other people who lived at St. Coletta. They were very loving, and they would greet you with hugs and talk to you. And so I just had a great time, and I didn't really understand at first. And then, you know, my mom and dad talked to me about who she was. And then the tragedy of Jack's assassination, when the president was killed, I very acutely knew who he was and how he was related to Rosemary. And so when that happened, anybody who was alive through that, I'm sure you knew where you were if you were alive through that. Everybody kind of knows where they were when they heard the news of our president and the assassination. And it was a tragic event. And Rosie also knew that this was her brother, and she and Sister Paulus and the other nuns watched the funeral on television, and she was very sad.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. What year? I'm trying to remember. I think I was a little boy at the time when he was killed. What year was that?
That would have been in 1963, and I was in first grade.
Oh, I was born in 66. So
you weren't
yet.
Even alive. You were
wow.
You were just a sparkle in your mother's eye.
Isn't that something?
Yes, you're just a wee thing. You're young.
Right.
But those of us who were alive do remember, and it's sort of like today's people who were alive, you know, remember exactly where they were when they found out about 9/11, you know,
right.
Horrific,
yes.
Time then.
Wow, but you look a little younger than, I'm trying to look at your picture and you're giving me these dates and years.
It's the hair.
So
I have wrinkles just everywhere.
Well, you do it well. I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, how much younger? Because we look the same age. I'm looking at your photo and everything. Wow. That's really something, though. So what is it about your own life that inspired you to write a story about Rosemary?
Well,
Rosemary's story, I'm sorry.
Right. I've been a writer now since my son was little, which he's 32 now, so mm-hmm. almost 30 years I've been a writer. And I write, I've written a lot of things for newspapers and magazines and a lot of children's books.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was a teacher previously, I really enjoyed children's books, and I love reading them, and I love writing them. And so one day, several years ago, I was kind of unsure about what my next writing project would be. I didn't really know what I should do. So I've been in a dream group for many years, and I believe in the power of interpreting our own dreams, because I feel that's a key to our own subconscious. And so I write my dreams in a dream journal. I study them. I've been in a dream group for years where we help each other learn about our dreams. And so I know that we can actually ask ourselves questions. If you have a relationship problem, or if you have a career problem, whatever it is that you are puzzled about, what you would do is, before you go to sleep, you write one sentence of a very clear question, and you say, tonight I will dream the dream I need to find out, what my next career move should be, or what is the next book project I need to write? Well, that was my question. What book project should I write next? Well, that very night, a young blonde man came to me, and he told me I would write The Missing Kennedy. I actually didn't want to do this because I didn't want to upset any of the Kennedys. But he assured me that the Kennedys actually wanted me to write this. And so I started researching, and in my research, I was on the internet, and I found a picture, and this picture was of the young blonde man,
mm-hmm.
and it was labeled David Kennedy, and David Kennedy was the young son of Robert Kennedy, who unfortunately, as a small boy, witnessed his own father's assassination on television. And he grew up with a lot of mental health problems. He sought drugs and alcohol to alleviate his pain. And unfortunately, he had a very sad ending. But one of the other things that I read in my research was that he had had a conversation with his cousins. And he told his cousins that he most closely identified with his Aunt Rosemary. His cousin said, well, why would you identify with her? I mean, what possible reason would you find? And he said, well, if my grandfather Joseph were alive today, he said, I too would be lobotomized. He felt that he was an embarrassment to his family because he had been in and out of prison. He didn't know how to cope. And when he was in his 20s, he accidentally overdosed on drugs and died.
Oh, wow.
So although this was a horrific story in a tragedy, I feel like somehow I contacted him across the other side because it was so odd that I, had this dream. And so I thought, I think there's a deeper reason why I need to write about Rosemary.
Yeah.
And so that's what motivated me to write this book.
I was going to say, it's like a kind of spooky. I mean, in a good way, like all of this connecting together, like it was meant to happen.
You know, I feel like if you think about your life
mm-hmm.
and daily go through your life, and do you ever have moments of serendipity where all of a sudden you might be thinking one word or one thing and you look down and suddenly there's a license plate, personalized license plate that says the word?
Yes.
Or, you know, something that's really odd that happens and you think, wow, what a coincidence.
Yes.
But, you know, I think the universe really does have a plan for us. And I think it's more than a coincidence sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So look at these signs as some sort of positive statement that maybe you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, that you need to think about these actions carefully.
Yeah. Because I've had things happen similar like that. You're thinking about one of your favorite songs from the 80s or something.
Right.
And you go in the supermarket, it's playing on this loudspeaker, and then you're
exactly.
thinking about the people you're around during that time. You bump into them getting off the train.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It is. So you have to start thinking, well, why did the universe have this happen?
Right.
You know, what are the words of this song? What about how I felt when I first heard this song?
Yes,
maybe
indeed.
It was a good feeling. Maybe I can recapture that feeling,
yes,
you know.
Yes, indeed. And it's funny that people that – sometimes I look at folks who don't get that kind of thing, and I almost feel sad for them. But I feel like, wow, you're missing out on, like, fun.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? To know that you're connected like that.
Absolutely.
Nice.
It adds that extra special joy to our lives.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Now, as a previously published author, and as you mentioned earlier, you're the niece of the caretaker of Rosemary. Out of all the people, you would be definitely qualified to know what was really going on in her life. The other information that's out there about Rosemary, are they accurate as far as you're concerned? You know, the things that have gone on, the stories and the accounts.
Right. There's
you're
a lot
right
of
there. Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even me, before I did my research. And growing up as a young child, I didn't really understand why Joseph chose this lobotomy for her. And I was very angry at him, and it bordered on actual hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think hatred is good for anybody, much less me. And so my mother and Sister Paulus tried to explain what brought him to this decision. And I didn't really understand because I wasn't mature enough to know this. And then when I researched the book and I found out how horrible life was back in the days of Rosemary's disability, you know, she was diagnosed as, they would say then, mentally retarded. She was not mentally retarded. Today, doctors theorized that she was learning disabled.
Oh, I
and,
see.
And, you know, the people back then who were disabled in any way or suffered from a mental disease were hidden away because if they were discovered in a family, the whole stigma around it was so horrible, people thought that the devil caused it. You know, anything that was wrong with you was caused by the devil.
Oh.
They thought that maybe it was bad parenting or bad genes. And so people who had a family member with this, with one of these symptoms or diseases would hide the person away in an attic or a basement because if they were discovered, the town could burn their house down. They could commit violence. To anybody in the family, the breadwinner would lose his job. So suddenly it had to be hidden and kept secret. Doctors advised patients, family members, to take their loved ones and put them in an institution and never visit them. because they thought it would be too emotionally much of an upheaval in their lives. So when Rosemary was put in an institution, they told Joe this, and so Joe told his family that Rosemary simply got worse, which in a way she did get worse, and had to be institutionalized. So for 20 years, she was never visited by her family.
Oh, my God. See, that makes a lot of sense to me, because I used to, I watch a lot of old movies.
Right.
And I remember watching something, matter of fact, I think it was a couple of weeks ago. It was just a little scene with the man asked one of, I think the leading lady in the character, is that, was there ever any mental illness in your family? But the way they did it, it was like, and then the music went, like, he just asked her, what's the big deal?
Exactly.
He just asked, was it mental illness in your family? But you would have thought he killed her kid the way she looked at him.
Right.
And the camera got really close on her. And then, I mean, that was like the scariest part out of the movie.
Exactly.
You know?
It was thought to be so different that it was just a, you know, a horrible thing. And if she would have said yes, you know, that would have been at the end of either that relationship or,
you know,
he would have run from her, or maybe he could have harmed her, or,
right.
I mean, it would have been awful.
You're right, because that's the look she had. Like, what do I say? Because she really did. I can't remember what the story was, but it was just a small scene, just that little part.
Yes.
How strange.
And even in the
60s,
even in the 60s, you know, there was a parallel to my own family. My aunt had schizophrenia, although we did not know what that was when she was acting out. My uncle and two other aunts suffered from depression, but again, we didn't know the name of this. And so my mother told me that I was never to speak about my Aunt Zora ever. You know, we didn't talk about it, and when we had an issue with her, we would whisper about Aunt Zora.
Wow.
So it was never told. And so when I, back, you know, 5 years ago when I was writing this book, I told one of my cousins on the other side of the family that I had an aunt who was schizophrenic and I was writing about her, there was this gasp because she too had an aunt who was schizophrenic, and neither of us knew that about each other.
Amazing.
And here, when we were young, we could have talked about it and bonded and realized, you know, that we weren't alone and that there were things that, you know, better avenues for them, but we had no idea. So that was a big secret in both of our lives.
Wow. I'm just sitting here like, wow, in shock. Boy, we were really ignorant back then, weren't we?
We were, and we have to work today so that we don't go backwards. We need to know that we have got to treat everyone fairly with empathy and love, because today's homeless population, unfortunately, most of those people or many of those people have mental illness, mental disease, and they don't know what to do about it, and frankly, our government doesn't do enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have to work together to fight our own issues and to make sure that we don't have stigma about this in our own lives. That, you know, having a mental disease is like me having arthritis.
Right.
You know, it's something that we have, and we have to learn how to deal with it effectively.
Now, in writing your book, this beautiful work, you got to be proud of this book. It's just so beautiful just to look at.
Thank you.
I know you were required to do a lot of research.
Yes.
Did the research change your view of the Kennedy family? Or,
yes.
Matter of fact, yeah, how was your views about the family and your opinion?
Well, I've always, like I said, you know, didn't appreciate Joe's conundrum of what a horrible situation he was faced with. And I also didn't really understand Mrs. Kennedy, how her daughter could evaporate for 20 years and she do nothing about it.
Wow.
But, you know, I read a lot about Mrs. Kennedy, and She was the product of a marriage that was very similar to her own, and her mother was a very Victorian woman, and so she passed those values along to Rose. And, you know, you stick with your husband no matter what. The husband rules the situation. You know, this is how it is for women. So Rose, although she was quite spunky herself, you know, just accepted that the doctors had said Rosemary should not have visitors, and she just felt that was true, until, of course, the fateful day when Joe had a stroke. And in the December of 61, Joe had a debilitating stroke. So that's when Rose found out the truth about where her daughter was, and that's when she said, let Rosemary, you know, out into public, let's embrace her. And suddenly Rosemary started visiting the family. You know, she learned socialization through my aunt, and Rosemary had a very full life, as much as she could have, after that, and she lived a very happy existence.
Oh, that's such a nice, happy ending, because, you know, I used to wonder, like, whatever actually happened to her. Was she just sitting in a chair every day, all day,
right?
Or was she actually involved?
She had a good life, yes. She was very well-loved, and she traveled all around to her family members, and, you know, she went places locally. She visited us, and we visited her, and we had many happy occasions.
Man, now she was responsible. She had something to do with the Special Olympics.
Yes, she did. Her sister Eunice saw Rosemary and saw the other people at St. Coletta, and she noticed that they were all rather overweight and lethargic, and they didn't move very quickly. So she felt that they would appreciate getting athletically involved. So she started in her own backyard, Special Olympics, and worked with the children herself, swimming and horseback riding and doing all sorts of games. And, of course, today we know that Special Olympics is throughout the entire world, and millions of people have been able to take advantage of that.
Isn't that something? Boy, even a person in a condition like that could create such a beautiful thing.
Yes, so we have a lot to be grateful for.
Oh, man. That's really awesome. You know, I am so sorry. We're at 6:29 my time. I guess it's 3:27, I'm sorry, your time. You're 3, right?
Yes.
And we're 6. Yeah, I'm here in Philadelphia. Well, this is the mark of a good show, and it flies by like that.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad you came on, because each time you come on, I learn something more about this amazing woman. And, wow, I'm just sitting here and shut my eyes are all big. I have to, like, kind of calm down. This was really, really fascinating. I really appreciate you coming on again.
Well, I appreciate the ability to do this and to spread the word about, you know, no matter if you have a suffering from depression or another mental disease, you know, contact the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and they have chapters all over the world to help each other dealing with it, or if you have a family member who is dealing with it. And, you know, we can all do something in our everyday activities to make sure that we have compassion for others.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. The book is called The Missing Kennedy, Rosemary Kennedy and the Secret Bonds of Four Women. And my guest today was Elizabeth Kaler Pentecost. And the book is beautiful. Please, just get it. Even sit it out on your coffee table. It's just a beautiful book. I know you're proud of it. The color, the whole thing, they just did a really nice job with that. And, so I look forward to being with you all again next week for another fascinating guest. You've been listening to It's All About You, the radio program that's celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall, and I look forward to being with you next week. And so it is.